Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. The good, the bad, and the science. Television, movies, comedians, and scientists. The good, the bad, and the science.
Welcome to The Good, the Bad, and the Science, the show that breaks down the science of television and movies with a comedian and a scientist. Today we're discussing Judi Dench's wild Borneo adventure. So I'll ask about orangutans, kubongs, and dung beetles. Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Ethan Edinburgh, and I've got two wonderful guests joining me today. My first guest is an actor, writer, and comedian you might know from shows like Gracie and Frankie, Mystery Science Theater 3000, or a personal favorite, The New Negroes with Baron Vaughn and Open Mike Eagle. Welcome to the show, Baron Vaughn.
Oh, hello. Hello. Am I the bad? You're the good.
I am the good.
Then I must be the bad. Because I feel like our next guest is the science.
Is the science. That's correct. Yeah, but bad in like a cool way. Like
Know,
a jazz cat.
Like that kind of
Baron.
You know, that like, well, leave that boy alone. That whole song.
Okay, actually, this is a great transition because I wanted to... Listen, we've discussed a lot of movies on this podcast, okay? And you are killed in one of the funniest movies of all time, Black Dynamite.
What a fantastic introduction. You were killed in one of my faves.
I had to bring it up. I had to say it. And I know we're not here to discuss that movie at all, but did you know while you were filming how, like, incredible that finished product was going to be? I mean, what was that experience like?
Well, Ethan, I don't know why I'm surprised that you're such a super nerd, but you know, the thing is, like, I'm quite honored that you've noticed some things that I've done. Yeah, when I read the script, I thought it was one of the funniest things that I've ever read. And the script in itself works on all those levels that you see in the movie. Like, in the script, they're very specific when it's the actor who's playing Black Dynamite. Now it's time for a love scene. The actor playing Black Dynamite clearly is uncomfortable doing the scene, as if it's just in his contract. And I'm like, whoa, they're like really like, not only the characters in the movie, but the actors who are playing the characters are also part of the whole thing. And I was like, this is brilliant. And it ended up being better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I was blown away by that movie. And if you haven't seen it and you're watching / listening to this, do yourself a favor and watch it after this. It's unbelievable. Baron.
Yes.
Speaking of Judi Dench's wild Borneo adventure, you got a really similar new show coming out, right? It's about to premiere called Baron Vaughn's Wild Beverly Hills Adventure. Is that correct?
No, not at all. I wish that was correct. But no, I'm going to be staying inside. That's what I'm going to be doing right now.
Yeah, got it. Oh, doing your podcast Now and Then, which I heard a little bit of.
Yes.
Self-quar. What was it? Self-quar?
Is the name of it. Yeah, yes. My propensity to pontificate shows up again. It's just about, well, you know, clearly we're in an unprecedented global situation and everyone is having to deal with it as they have to deal with it. And obviously it's a bummer, but the point is we're still here and we still have to be here. So I'm curious as to what it is that people are doing to get themselves through this, you know, what it brings up for them and what's just been helping them, you know, who's been helping them, the ideas, what they're reading, all that kind of stuff. Like, that's what I'm interested in because, you know, I need help, you know, I think like everybody else.
Well, it certainly helps me to listen to you. I'm sure many people feel the same. And speaking of getting through this weird time, it's a great transition to our next guest who's on the other side of the world getting through the same thing. So I'm very interested to see how he's dealing with it. He is the lead scientist for the Nature Conservancy's Asia Pacific region. He is responsible for ensuring that the Conservancy remains a world leader in making science-based conservation decisions. Welcome to the show, Eddie Game.
Hey, thank you, Ethan. I'm having my own wild island adventure here because we're in lockdown currently in Brisbane, and every one of my neighbors has decided that's the perfect time to pull out power tools and demolish so you're gonna hear the symphony of angle grinders and circular saws while we do this.
Oh, great. Well, also super parallels the show that we saw. I mean, I have so many questions for you, Eddie. First of all, we talked a little bit before the podcast, and Baron agreed with me. Your name's great. It sounds like a movie in and of itself.
Eddie, I'm Baron Vaughn. It's rare that I meet someone with a name better than mine.
I could have done more with that, couldn't I? How did I be the scientist for Eddie Game? Yeah.
I'm sure it helps you, I don't know, raise money or something, like if you just playthegame.org. I don't know how you do it, but I'm delighted to have you on the show. And honestly, I could probably do a whole pod just about your life. I was reading some about you. You've been in over 20 different countries. You've helped innovative methods to projects as diverse as community protected areas in Melanesia, grazing management in northern Kenya, snow leopard conservation in Mongolia, forestry in Indonesia, and catchment restoration in Colombia. So first off, holy frigging mackerel, okay? Secondly, you know, I have a podcast, so I'm like super educated and shit, but for people listening, what is catchment restoration?
Well, yeah, good question. And you know, just on my name, Ethan, you wouldn't believe it. Google told me it wasn't a real name. When I tried to set up a Google account, they said, no, that's a made-up name. I had to provide like 6 points of evidence that it was actually my name.
You are not that
that's
cool.
Right. Yeah, they said, no one can have that name. Catchment restoration. Well, I guess in simple terms, we've pulled off so much vegetation. We've cleared so many trees from catchments. And the catchment is the area that water drains into a river or a creek from. And as it flows across the surface, if you don't have any trees, it basically runs really quickly, picks up lots of sediment and other crap, and it ends up in the river. Catchment restoration is just planting trees again to slow that water running into the creeks, basically.
Wow. Okay. Awesome. And I mean, that seems super important, especially considering this documentary where it seems like planting trees is the best thing that we can do for the planet, right?
Yeah. I mean, trees did figure out this trick of taking carbon dioxide out of the air. That's pretty useful, actually.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you've been to Borneo. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. I've had the great fortune of spending a lot of time in Borneo. So many of those forests that Judy walked in were pretty familiar. Some of those characters were familiar. I haven't been pulled up a tree like she was, but and my trips don't usually start with champagne and helicopters, but other than that, there were lots of similarities.
Yeah. I mean, I know that we can play clips on the show, so I'm sure we can just cut to a clip of Judy Dench drinking some champagne, but I'd kind of rather have Baron recreate it. Do you mind doing that?
Well, you know, Eddie, I'm so happy that you've actually been to Borneo because I can't imagine staying as contained as Dame Judy Dench stayed when she was looking at the forest, at the wildlife, at the insects. It was just constantly this, oh my, wow. It's the smallest, most nuanced amazement I have ever seen in my life. I would probably be way too loud and, you know, make something horrible happen, like, what? And then it's going to be like some sort of like, oh, all the katydids ever are coming or something. But like, how was it for you the first time you were there? Were you that contained?
Oh, you know, it's funny. The first time I was really in one of those forests, what blew me away was actually how noisy it was. I was kind of amazed. In that film, they kept on whispering all the time. I think, you know, maybe they were wondering if there were orangutan around them or something, but I could hardly hear everybody speak. It's so noisy in those forests where there's so many animals making noise. It's pretty mind-blowing, but you never, I mean, Judy got the royal treatment flying over a helicopter, but that's what you want to do, because when you're standing in the bottom of a forest, you know, it looks like forest, it's sort of up here right against you, you don't really see it, but yeah, I can see why she did that helicopter shot at the start. It's pretty epic to see it from that view.
I had another question about the beginning of this show. Judy just skims over this fact as she's narrating, where she says that she recently adopted 3 orangutans, and then just kind of keeps talking about the adventure she's about to go on. But I was like, wait. Rewind a second.
Wow, I didn't catch that at all.
Yeah, she just kind of said it. I had to have the captions on because I'm trying to write notes. I'm trying to do my due diligence here. And I was like, wait, what? How can that be a thing? Like, is that legal for people to have orangutans?
If Judy says it is, that must be a higher class organization. We just let people adopt trees. We haven't gone to orangutans.
Well, would she possibly mean that maybe she's, like, supporting from a distance? 3.
Oh, okay.
I don't doubt that they could be at her place, though. She really...
That's how I saw it. I saw her drinking champagne with orangutans, and I was like, I guess when you're a fancy person, you can just get away with whatever.
My, continue to frolic, Charles. Continue to frolic. That's very good. That's her excitement.
She never came back to her children, right? Her adopted orangutan children. I kind of expected we'd return to them at some point in the narrative, but did they ever come make an appearance? I don't think so.
We got to keep watching. You got to, you know, subscribe to Discovery Plus and watch the entire way through. And maybe at the end, you'll get a little, you know, the orangutans on the couch with her at home and they're, you know, passing popcorn. And stuff. I don't know how it works over there. Listen, I don't know about you. Maybe Baron, you will relate with me on this. I was stunned pretty consistently with how kind of calm and appreciative Judy was of everything without freaking out about the dangers of the rainforest. I was thinking about that constantly, and they very rarely discussed it. So could you, like, walk me through what the dangers are, Eddie? Like, how do you prepare to go into it? Because they seem like they didn't even have, like, protective
gear. It really
gear.
Was like she was just like, all right, champagne's down. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go for a
what?
Stroll.
Put shoes on. Why?
And then it's like, oh, there's more insects here than anywhere in the world, and they're like the size of a basketball.
I think that is the worst. They're leeches. There are so many leeches in that forest, and they never cut to a scene of like a huge swollen leech on her leg. But yeah, that place is full of leeches, and people prepare for them in different ways. I like to wear like small shoes and small socks so I can see them on my legs and get them off as quickly as possible. But other people sort of put almost a hazmat suit on. And one of the people working with me once, she put all this gear on and she covered all of her pants and her shoes in so much DEET, you know, that really strong insect killing stuff, that it dissolved her shoes. And then at that point I started wondering what's worse, the repellent or the leech bite? But she really didn't want to get a leech bite.
Oof. Well, what is that even? Luckily, I've never gotten a leech bite. Describe.
Oh, so the thing about leeches is it doesn't really hurt that much, but they put a little antiseptic on so you don't feel the bite too much. But then they put a lot of this anticoagulant stuff to stop your blood clotting so that they can keep on sucking. And so that when you pull it off, the blood just keeps coming and coming and coming. And, you know, you often get back to the field station and pull your leeches off and then just sort of walk little pools of blood around until you eventually start clotting up.
I mean, I hate how you're talking about it so nonchalantly.
So casual.
Like, it just happens all the time. Like, I mean, how many times have you been leeched at a game?
I've lost count.
Oh, no.
Oof. I do not envy you.
No, that's terrible.
Yeah, they don't.
But you're...
They don't put that in the kind of... Welcome to Borneo documentaries of people pulling leeches off themselves.
I had a question because it's kind of thinking about that whole, the catchment thing. Am I saying that correctly? Catchment? Where it's like this crazy, it sounds like an insane word, but it's the simplest thing ever. It's like, oh, but there's an order to it. So it takes a long time, I would assume, to study how, like to find out like, oh, this is what we're missing here. And I know that there's been a lot of different, you know, kinds of research about the delicacy of all these different ecosystems. But I guess that my question is, when you're in the jungle, because when I watch a nature doc, like everything seems like it's in place. Like when I see an insect, it doesn't gross me out. I'm like, yeah, that's where that insect's supposed to be. Like a katydid the size of my arm. That's where that is. Not here. I'm here. And if it was here, it'd be like, whoa, anachronism, you know, in a sort of way. Does it feel like that when you're there? Do you feel like that sense of order?
Yeah, that's a great observation. And I think it does, you know, especially when you're in a good forest. It's amazing. You don't have to be an ecologist or a trained person to be in one of these forests and think, hey, this is what a rainforest should be like. This is kind of the way it sounds and looks and feels. And then you go to some other piece of forest, you know, maybe like the stuff she flew across at the beginning with all the oil palm everywhere and the little patches of forest. And you can be in there and you're like, oh, yeah, something's not quite right here. You know, it's a bit hotter. It's a bit lighter. It's a bit windier. The insects don't sound quite right. So, yeah, I think you pick up that sense of order when you're in a good, healthy forest.
That's fantastic. Follow-up question. I hope you don't mind, Ethan.
I love it. Please take over. I'm out of here.
Speaking of that sense of order, it's funny because, you know, that part where she's flying over all of the palm oil farms and all that stuff. And I've seen that exact thing, of course, in the Amazon. I've seen that thing in all of these different, well, important places around the world. And that's what we call a monoculture. Is that true? And that's like the opposite of the jungle.
It is exactly the opposite.
Can you explain why that is significant?
Yeah, actually, can he be the scientist as well? This is great.
Yeah! Late night docs are paying off.
Dumb, the dumb, the science, and the science.
Yeah. The good, the scientist, all in one. Yeah, you know, you're so right. That is the opposite of what you see. Those rainforests that she's in are some of the most biodiverse places, and that means the places with the most species, and particularly tree and plant species. It's extraordinary. And oil palm really is one species, you know, just plant one over another. And then what the problem is with that is that all of the other, I don't know, all those insects, you know, remember that white sheet that they put up, and there was like 1,000 different species of insect on that white sheet alone? They all,
The thing I'm going to have nightmares about.
Exactly.
For
the size of your arm, the one that cicadas that pee on you all the time. Yeah, every one of them has its own. There was a lot of poo references in this film.
But, and of course, a Spider-Man ant. That was my favorite.
Oh, the Spider-Man ant. That's right. So many cool bugs. But they've all got their own, they've all got their own niche in the environment. And the more different tree species, the more niches, the more other species. So you take away all those trees down to one. You just don't have many places for things to live. You don't have many niches, many kind of, you know, unique little things that those bugs occupy. That's the big issue.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. This is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
Speaking of bugs, I do have to really, unfortunately, ask about them. There's a centipede they're talking about that can kill a human. So I got to bring that up. I mean, is that, have you come into contact with that? Can you tell me how they kill humans? Like, what the F, basically, is what I'm asking. What the holy F, Eddie Game?
I fortunately have not come into contact with that centipede or any deceased humans as a result of centipedes. But when I worked in, I worked a lot in Papua New Guinea too, and the forests are similar in some ways, and they have a centipede there that they call chop off your arm, because if it bites you, they said the pain is so bad that you would rather chop off your arm than continue to live with it. So I have no doubt that centipede bites are incredibly painful, and I have no desire to encounter it.
Have you had to encounter a lot of some of these poisonous species and gotten the worst of it?
Yeah, you sound like to me like a veteran basketball player who, like, you know, when they talk about their injuries, it's like you don't really know the details, but they're like, yeah, I've had a broken ankle, 3 broken ribs, like my wrist is sprained 5 times. It's like, is that your, do you have just like a medical history list like that?
Got a few of them, a few scars. One great one from Borneo, they have these big, like big hornets, and it was beautiful, big, golden hornet. And I was right at the end of a day of forest. You know, I'd made it successfully through, you know, 8 hours of forest walking without any injuries. And I could see the camp and I got bitten by this hornet. And I thought, oh, that's kind of painful. It's not too bad, but it must have had some toxin in because it started sort of, I don't know, eating away the flesh of my arm. And 2 days later, I had this big hole in my arm. From
what?
Oh, my God.
How did, what happened next? He asked.
You just heal up?
No. I went to hospital and they sort of cleaned out all the dying flesh, tried to clean out as much of the toxin as possible. And yeah, it healed fine, but I got a nice scar from it.
How are they not getting bitten? How are they not getting injured?
And
I just assumed that was going to happen any second.
The power of Dame Judi Dench. Even those insects were like, wait, that's the queen. Like, she's been Elizabeth and Victoria. We can't mess with her. We can't mess with her.
There's like a weird, there's a force field as she walks through Borneo of just like everyone pays their respects. They like bow and then they just go on their way.
I think that's right. You know, it was just sort of calmness just follows her everywhere. Even, you know, when they sort of cut to her traveling companion at one point and he only lasted, what, 2 minutes before the thunderstorm came rolled in and they're like, we got to get out of here.
That was something that I had to put the subtitles on because I didn't understand how she described him at first, but she said, I've brought my chap. And I was like, oh, I think she said boyfriend, but like in Dench, you know, I've brought my chap. And I'm like, I wonder how many chaps she has just yeah, all around in every jungle, say. Just like, you know, the South American chap.
My chap for this part of the world, Kirk, came with
me. A chap
me.
For every hemisphere.
I've got chaps in different areas of code.
That's very silly.
The symphony, you were talking about the sound of the forest. Like a good forest has the right sound, you were describing. And there's this awesome sequence where at like 6 p.m., I think that was the name of the cicada, if I remember correctly, the 6 p.m. cicada.
Is that what they really
is
call
there,
it?
Can you?
Oh, wow.
Okay.
That's how many species there are. They're out of names. Just the 6 p.m. cicada, Spider-Man ant, I don't know. That ant was bit by a spider. How about that?
So lazy. Your peers are so lazy at E-game. Yeah, so why? I mean, I assume it's called that because it starts making that sound at 6 p.m. I mean, they were describing it as like basically it's like a miracle that all these animals do it at the same time. So is that like a temperature triggered thing or what?
Yeah, that's a change in time of the day. So you have a ton of animals that specialize in that kind of period between the daylight and nighttime, and 6 p.m. is right about there. And because Borneo is right in the tropics, you know, it's pretty much smack bang in the middle of the planet, it doesn't change much season to season. So you can call it six, sort of a late, you're right, you are lazy. It's like 6 p.m. because, you know, that's pretty much sunset every day of the year. It doesn't matter if it's winter or summer because there isn't really those seasons. So, but that, you know, that is the noisiest time of the day because you have this, I don't know, you have all of the daylight animals just going to bed and saying their last goodbyes in a way, and all the nighttime animals waking up and starting to say, hey, good morning to everyone. And that's also when, you know, we use sound a lot to tell the health of forests, and the best time to look at that is that evening chorus.
Okay, that's awesome. And there was one, I got to mention that cicada that I could not believe the sound that it made. Like, they touch this one cicada and it shrieks. It really freaks out and makes what appears to be a very loud sound. So can you tell me how it's doing that? I'd never heard anything like that.
Oh, yeah, that was terrific. I actually learned more about how that was doing that on this show. That was a wonderful takeaway from this show. So you should just play that clip because they gave a terrific explanation about how it was rubbing its legs against the cavity of its wings. I'm not going to be able to reproduce that.
Just off of what Eddie said there, I was curious about what were some other, like, some takeaways that you had from the show.
Oh, yeah. You know, I thought there were some cool things. Overall, they had a heap of good scientists on there, and I think that really helped. You know, and they covered one of the things I loved is that they covered everything from like the cool natural history of animals right up to like big global trends to do with forests, and had scientists who were, you know, that's a thing you might not be able to tell just from watching it, but a lot of those people, a lot of her chaps that were accompanying her at various points were really good scientists, real experts, and so they weren't just kind of like the media people. Blowing in, you know, these are academics who do work in that space, and so So I thought that was really good. And I thought the fact that they talked a ton about the role of insects in general was great, because, you know, it'd be so tempting to do a whole show on orangutans or the kubong or, you know, cool things like that. But yeah, they're right. I mean, insects drive the forest. Insects are what turn the trees into food for everything else, and even turn the trees into food for themselves again. So that was pretty cool.
That was fascinating. You must have been so pissed they didn't invite you on to do the show. I mean, you've been there. Like, that's really rude and really crappy of them. I'll say it. The dung beetle was one of those insects that they were talking about how vital it is, how important it is to the ecosystem of the rainforest. And in case you're not aware, it doesn't have that name for no reason. It literally is rolling up balls of crap all the time and moving it to a safe location where it can use it for its home and, I guess, food.
One beetle's trash, you know, one beetle's dung is another one's wrong. I got no rhyme, but you know what I mean.
Lifeblood? Yeah, it's weird, but it's true. I mean, they were describing it as like, if those dung beetles didn't do that, that they'd be like up to their waists in animal dung. Like, is that accurate? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, that's funny. That was probably one of the few lines in that film where I was like, I don't think that's right. But, you know, I've never walked through a forest. I've walked through some forests that don't have enough dung beetles, and I don't remember having to sort of wade through the feces of other animals.
But, they just swimming through crap. Snorkel.
Just like a dung Moses. Just the part that... It's let it smell the whole thing. Oh my goodness.
I hope you take that the right way, Eddie Game. You do look like a dung Moses, and it's a compliment.
That's why I'm not on the show with Judy Dench. It's just
if you ever get a speciality in the dung beetle that is a great thing to put on a business card. Eddie Game. Yeah. Dung Moses.
Standing with
yeah, I was
waves of crap and a big staff.
I was also struck. I had never seen the thing about the stuff that was about the carbon dioxide and the sort of the mapping that he did with the graphics and all that stuff. I had never seen anything that was like that. And he said, I don't remember who it was, but he said that was one of the things that was helping turn the corner, maybe, for a lot of governments who weren't believing, I guess, you know, what was happening. Have you ever seen anything like that before, like those graphics?
Yeah, that was terrific, wasn't it? It's a guy called Greg Asner who does a lot of that. We call it remote sensing, which is basically taking images from satellites or from aeroplanes. He took all of those on an aeroplane. And it is one of the things that it has done is really emphasize to governments all around the world how important forests are for the carbon budget, you know, the amount of carbon we have in the planet. And you know, two big things happen, I guess. When you turn some of that forest into agriculture, like an oil palm plantation, you release a ton of carbon just because you chop those trees down. But then you also don't have those trees there pulling more carbon out of the air. And so the combination of those two things mean that if you keep forest there, even a little bit, it's so valuable. And so that's, I think, what Greg meant to turn the corner, because you're seeing governments think, you know, the best way that I can meet our carbon, our climate change commitments for countries that have made them is just to stop chopping forest down. You don't have to stop driving cars. You don't have to stop doing all this other stuff. Just stop chopping the forest down, which for some places is easier than other options.
Oof. And scoof. That's what I get. I those are my sounds I make because, you know, I have two children, two little children, and my toddler, well, they're both toddlers, but my oldest loves the movie Rio, right? Not the best. However, there was a sequel, Rio 2. Surprisingly, there's a lot about poaching and farming and these people who are out there in all of these different jungles that are burning the jungle intentionally. And that was another thing that was really shocking in the graphic where he showed all that satellite footage of all these different burning forests. And
yeah,
and
it's like the global fire.
Ugh. You know, there's that song, "This girl is on fire." And I'm like, what girl? Mother Earth? So here's a question for you, Eddie Game. I'm here in California, you know, and we have fires all the time. my today when I was out, I was like, oh, what, just like that thing where it's like, it's not just my allergies, but I'm like, I'm breathing in things that should have never been burned, you know, even. But they're starting to talk about this thing. And I was curious about, you know, if you have heard about this in other cultures, indigenous cultures around the world, about some of these indigenous cultures had ways to kind of control the fire, like burn things in a way that I don't understand it, but I was wondering if you knew anything about that.
Yeah. God, are you sure he's not the scientist? This is next level.
I mean, he's on the show because he's a genius.
Get out of here. I'll take all the compliments.
Yeah, no, spot on, Baron. You know, so one of the things that not so much in forests, but you see this a lot in big grasslands. You know, see this in lots of countries in Africa, in northern Australia, that what we've done as a kind of a European society is think fire is bad. What we have to stop fire at all costs. And so we try to suppress it and not have fires. And what that means is that you get all this extra, we call it fuel, but it's basically dead grass, dead trees and stuff lying around. And so when you do have fires, you have these catastrophically big fires. You know, I've seen them in California. We've had them here in Australia. And, you know, releases a ton of carbon dioxide. And perhaps more importantly, the big fires kill a lot of trees. And we see the same even in rainforests. But what a lot of indigenous communities did that used to manage and live with fire is they knew when to burn in the year. So they would burn as soon as they could, as soon as things became just dry enough, which means that there wasn't a lot of fuel lying around. So the fires are small. They tend to burn out quickly. They don't kill trees. They just burn the ground cover. A lot less destructive. And I think, you know, there's lots of places around the world thinking, wow, we could really learn a bit from that and start to change the way we manage fire.
So as soon as it's dry enough, we should go out, Baron and I, and just light some stuff on fire?
Yeah.
Just to get it out of the way?
Well, hey, here in L.A., there's enough. I still hear fireworks all the dang nabbed time in places where I shouldn't. So hopefully that's, you know, that is one of the reasons some of these fires start, actually. Yeah. And, you know, people got to know that baby's gender for some reason. Just got to know it.
Yeah, you know, it's a tricky balance too, right? Because one of the challenges in somewhere like California is that the Forest Service knows what it's got to do. It knows how to burn, but any burning releases smoke, which kind of sucks for people. I mean, no smoke is good for you. And so every day they're like, oh my God, well, could we burn? But if we burn now, there's going to be too much smoke in the city. So the number of days when they can actually burn is pretty small, unfortunately. And that's the same anywhere. And, you know, we don't really think about that as much in places like Indonesia, but we did some research a handful of years ago about those exact fires that you saw on that image. And the carbon is one thing, but the impact on people's health, the community's health in Indonesia is staggering. Like, you know, really a lot of extra people dying just because of the smoke from all of that burning.
Oh, my Lord. Are there things that we can do? I mean, obviously volunteer for the Nature Conservancy, I assume. But, you know, anything else, just because I just naturally feel guilty and prompted to do something to try to help. I mean, but, you know, give me instructions. I'll follow them.
Yeah, well, there are some easy things. Like a lot of those forests that Judy was in, around them, they're being protected because they're actually still used as forest for logging, which is not, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because one of the reasons why so much forest got cleared in Borneo is because people stopped making enough money from logging. And so they started thinking, oh, well, we'll clear the whole lot and grow oil palm. Whereas, you know, she kept on saying, oh, this last wonderful patch of forest. And it is, but it's completely surrounded by all of these logging concessions. And those logging concessions do a lot better when they're certified in some sort of international arrangement. So when you see little logos like the Forest Stewardship Council, you know, you're buying timber where the people who manage the forest are really thoughtful about the impact on biodiversity. So that little stuff like buying certified paper or certified wood makes quite a big difference.
That's good to know.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The break is over. Here we go back to the show about science.
I have to ask about sun bears, because I think they might be my new favorite animal, or I guess top three at least. I had never heard of them before. If you haven't seen the show, They say they're the smallest bears in the world. Just that sentence alone captures me. I'm already just, I'm engulfed. I'm in.
I thought the smallest bears were gummy. Go ahead.
That's what I said while eating them.
Sorry to bounce from here to there, but continue what you were saying.
No, I love that. I don't know. I just wanted some more information about sun bears. I could have watched the whole thing just about sun bears. It made me so sad when they said that they're killed for medicine. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that they were good shots. I even called my family over. I got little kids too, Barry. I was like, oh my God, you should see this baby sun bear shot that they have on there with the Papa. What was his name? Papa Bear that he was called? Papa Sun Bear.
Yeah, Papa Bear.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The luckiest guy in the world who all his best friends are sun bears.
Yeah, sun bears, they are ridiculously cute, aren't they? Yeah, you know, it's really a shame. I mean, they've obviously lost a lot of habitat because of oil palm expansion. But, yeah, then they're hunted partly for their body parts. But the worst thing of all that happens to them sometimes is they do this harvesting of bile, of all things. You know, like this bear bile has this particular acid in it. And it turns out if you keep the bear alive but in miserable conditions, you can sort of continue to extract bile from it and sell it into the Chinese. And it's, I'm sorry to get so morbid, but it's horrendous. That is truly horrendous abuse of animals. But it's still very widely practiced from parts of East and Southeast Asia, and some bears have suffered horrendously because of it.
Protect these bears, please.
Protect these bears. God.
Yeah.
I got to get involved with some sort of sun bear organization.
This is just I'm sorry. This is so morbid that I was trying to come up with some sort of Godzilla joke, but I was like, yeah, right. In Godzilla, they were harvesting the tusks, but I got nothing. I got nothing. This is horrible.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Damn.
Yeah, sorry to go there. That really changed the tone, didn't it?
It's okay. I'm just thinking about harvesting bears for bile. What were you saying, Bear?
What you watching, Eddie? No, I'm joking. that's so dumb. And Gamora. I wanted to ask this because she did say that Borneo is the third biggest island? Is Australia the first?
I think actually they don't count Australia, so I think it would go.
They don't count Australia? Much.
Yeah, then they don't count continents, so I'm pretty sure it would go Greenland, New Guinea, and then Borneo.
Yeah, because Australia is the only country continent island, right?
I mean, it is. I mean, I was going to say, but how can you just decide not to count it? I mean, it hits the prerequisites. What are we talking about?
Yeah, that's right. You can't drive to anywhere else, surely. That's, there's only one prerequisite for an island.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one. Yeah.
That's right.
And it works. That's really strange. And the other one I wanted to ask about was the Spider-Man ants, which Baron mentioned before, that some, you know, schmuck, lazy peer of yours named. I actually don't know if that's actually the actual name, but they said it. They said it in the thing. But I was surprised by this ant because it squirts foam, as they described, and glues up its attackers. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, that's so cool, isn't it? You know, this is the strategy of squirting something sticky and gluing up attackers is really common. I mean, like, there's probably thousands and thousands of insects in Borneo that have something common. What they don't have, and what I've never seen, is one that you can pick up and just squeeze perfectly for the camera, and it sort of sprays out. You know, like that's pretty epic. But yeah, it's a really reliable strategy. You see it everywhere, you know, in the ocean too. It's just a good defense strategy. Spray something sticky and kind of gross, and it turns out most things that were going to eat you think twice about it.
I mean, that's also good life advice.
Yep.
That's also pretty good words to live by, I think.
That's what they say, yeah. If you're being robbed or something, to just like excrete as much as you can. Barf, whatever you got to do.
I actually might just yell the word spray and just see what happens.
Like, yeah, that's a very kind of post-pandemic way to give yourself personal spaces.
Say it, don't spray it. That's actually important now. That's very important.
And I got to say, I'm putting myself in the shoes of someone who is just watching someone else yell the word spray, and I'm pretty freaked out. Like, I think I would back up because I'm, I don't know, just the word, like, I'm expecting the worst now.
Yeah, we can learn a thing or two from nature. We've all learned something from Judi Dench's wild Borneo adventure.
Yeah, I always thought it was kind of cute in the way that I had this thought, because I remember her describing these trees, and like they were talking about how like the majority of species live like at a certain height, I guess, off of the ground in these trees. And she was saying something about like how it's like a condominium building, like you go up and up and there's different things. And I remember thinking like, maybe it's more like a condo is like these trees. Like, you know, is not the city the jungle of man? Have we not turned ourselves, yeah, like, it's like we're actually copying how jungles operate. Am I right, or am I right?
I mean, I think you're right as hell, but I mean, what do I know? Eddie Game, weigh in on this.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine now some sort of condominium that just gets bigger and bigger as it goes up instead of smaller and smaller.
I mean, the penthouse is like the biggest room.
Oh yeah, that's true. We engineered it that way.
And then I have to remind you of a certain futuristic documentary called The Jetsons, in which that's exactly what happens. Everyone's like, what's at the bottom? I think scorched earth.
Yeah. Fifth Element is the same way. You go to that, they have like a whole fog, like that's like the, you know, the disgusting zone. Like nobody's down there. It's scary at the bottom in the future of Fifth Element world.
That's true. Like in Blade Runners, all that stuff. It's kind of like where the future's the jungle. Yep. We're quote unquote beasts again. Huh? Mm-hmm. Sci-fi metaphor. Am I right?
Isn't that also a lyric in that Alicia Keys song? Yeah. It's a concrete jungle.
I don't. Yeah, I think you're right. See, there you go.
Concrete jungle where dreams are made.
Alicia Keys.
That was just a clip concrete from jungle. That was just a clip. Yeah, we took that stem, the acapella track. So thank you to Alicia for letting us use that. That's unbelievable.
Which, here's my related question, Eddie. Which musician do you think's lyrics reflect really what's happening in the jungles more than anybody else?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, for a number of field trips, for some reason, my playlist wasn't working, so all I could listen to was Jamie XX's album In Color. And so I find it really hard to separate anything happening in the forest from Jamie XX.
Well, there you
just
go.
Just ingrained.
Especially the opening track is something like, oh my gosh. That's like the opening line of the opening track. And I feel like that was a lot of my forest. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh.
So it's got that thumping, pumping kind of energy, huh?
Yeah.
And it's loud. Yeah.
That's what's happening. That's what's happening internally in Judi Dench's mind, mm-hmm, but it comes out so
goodness
delicate.
Oh, it's simply exactly what.
She's not even saying anything. She's not even.
Even when she laughs, it's just a very you probably can't hear my nose, but it's very like, yes.
So good.
She's awesome. She's awesome.
We should have just recorded this whole podcast with you as Judi Dench. People won't know. Like, they would just be listening, thinking we had Judi Dench on the program.
Yeah, I can do it. And then I'll do Idris Elba on the other side. People will be like,
oh, perfect.
Together again in Borneo. Jody.
Okay.
I'm sorry. That's my Idris. I'm so sorry.
That was great. That
Jody.
Was good.
Over Amy. Okay, I'm so sorry, Eddie. You're not British, no. But you probably heard it too much.
Honestly, let's cancel all. Let's delete everything that we've done here. I just want to do the Idris and Judi pod. Please, please, please. Okay, my last question. I know we're running short on time. It's mentioned that Borneo is one of the remaining untouched tropical rainforests, which explains why it has all this biodiversity, species of trees, et cetera, et cetera. So my question to you is, what other untouched tropical rainforests do we still have?
Oh, good question. That might have been a questionable claim. I mean, I think untouched by chainsaws, but I think if you ask the Dayak people of Borneo, they probably walked every square, you know, acre of that place. I bet they don't see it as untouched. So It's
lightly touched.
Lightly touched by people with slightly less destructive tendencies than the contemporary occupants. But there are, you know, the good news is there are plenty of other patches. We tend to call this forest primary forest. God, that's a boring science term. It used to be called virgin forest, but for some reason that's not PC anymore. So we call it primary forest. And there are other good patches in the world. Obviously, the Amazon's got some great sections of this. There's some left in the Congo Basin in Africa, particularly in the DRC, Congo, and Gabon, and then in Papua New Guinea. They're really the places where you have these decent chunks of primary, untouched, lightly touched forests left, and God, they're important for biodiversity.
Nice. Okay. Good to know that there's some. I had a you know, pessimistic like expectation that you were going to come on and tell me, oh, that's it. There's nothing else left. We screwed it all up. We scorched it all.
Yeah. Judy can't do any other wild adventures because that's it.
I mean, it's very hard to say that, like, you know, I don't know. I guess I get, you know, obviously that we've had whatever administration, the states we just left, and there's been a stroke of similar people in places like, I want to say a country like maybe Brazil, in which there are similar people that have are unfortunately seeming to be in control of one of the most important jungles, rainforests in the world. I guess that whole thing about voting does matter. I don't know what I want to say. I don't know what I want to say here. I'm just trying to
be
positive.
Speaking of that, and trying to just, I guess, promote some positivity, Baron, I don't know if you have shows coming up because of this whole Delta scare. I don't know if you're putting things on pause, but if there's anything at all you want to tell people about, plug, now would be the time.
Yeah, just check me out on baronvaughn.com. And I'm also on Twitter and Instagram. And, you know, if you Google me, you'll probably find what you're looking for, most likely.
Excellent. Well, I super appreciate you watching Judy Dench's Wild Borneo Adventure on Discovery Plus and coming on to the show.
No, it was quite wild.
Oh. Extraordinary. it was extraordinary to have you on the program today. I really do appreciate it. It's a delight to talk to you. And Eddie, anything you want to tell people about, please?
No, I mean, do watch the show. It was a great introduction to Borneo. You're going to see some stuff that you like and learn a bit. I learned a bit. And there are lots of good organizations working to try and save those forests and the animals in there. So again, you know, take to Google and look for good organizations that are doing good stuff there.
Any organizations you want to trash, any clown organizations that you can't stand, that you're against.
Punk organizations.
Yeah, punk-ass organizations, label them now.
Okay, you can pass.
No?
You can pass.
Nobody?
On that, Eddie.
Yeah, that's fine.
Not a game.
Oh,
I know, I had to do it. I'm so sorry.
Had to do it. No, thank you both for real so much, and I'll talk to you next time. Have a good one. Bye-bye. And of course, if you want to watch Judy Dench's Wild Borneo Adventure, you got to do it on Discovery Plus. And the best way to do that is to go to discoveryplus.com/goodbadscience for a free trial. Do it today.